Number 19, Wineskins and New Wine. Matthew 9, verse 17, Mark 2, verse 22, Luke 5, verse 37 to 39. The parable of the wineskins follows the parable of the patched cloth and forms part of the Lord's answer to the Baptist's disciples when they question Jesus concerning fasting. The two parables appear to teach the same lessons. Not really so. For while both parables are part of Christ's explanation why he did not teach his disciples to observe ritual and ceremonies and appointed feasts, there is progress in thought. The lesson of the patched garment is largely negative. The garment could not be mended, and the ceremonial system could not be made to do further service at that time. But the parable of the wineskins is not limited to indicating the uselessness of old skins for new wine, but shows that a wise man provides new skins for his new wine, so that neither wine nor skins is lost. A word is necessary about the making of wine in Palestine. The grapes are trodden out in a winepress, the juice being run off to a lower trough. Here, for a few days, the juice is allowed to go through the first stage of fermentation, which, because of its activity, was called the tumultuous stage. Wine put into either old or new skins before this process is complete would burst the containers. After 3 or 4 days, the wine is transferred to the bottles, as described in the following quotation. The bottles were partially tanned goatskins. The apertures where legs and tail had been were sewn up, leaving only that at the neck, which is firmly dyed when the skin is filled. The wine in the first stage of fermentation, if tied in the skins, would, by reason of the gas generated, burst them. When the tumultuous stage is passed, the new bottle yields sufficiently to permit completion of the process. Bottles once stretched in this way had no further powers of distension, and if used again for the same purpose would, of course, burst. What then is the positive teaching of this small parable? Surely it is not far to seek. Jesus was providing wine, new teaching, which could not be received by the adherents to the old legalism and formalism. He had therefore to provide new men to whom his message could be entrusted. Hence his calling of the 12 and the 70 and the instructions given to them. Hence his careful training of the 12 after the crowds were ceasing to follow him from place to place. Wine is used figuratively in the Old Testament. It is used by Isaiah in an unmistakable way for the gospel embodied in the covenants of promise. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Hearken diligently unto me, and let your soul delight itself in fatness. And I will make an everlasting covenant with you. Chapter 55, verses 1 to 3. In a passage which does not present quite so direct a parallel, but which requires a related interpretation, the same prophet says, Thus saith the Lord, As the new wine is found in the cluster, and one saith, Destroy it not, for a blessing is in it, so will I do for my servants' sakes, that I might not destroy them all. And I will bring forth a seed out of Jacob, and out of Judah an inheritor of my mountains. And mine elect shall inherit it, and my servants shall dwell there. Isaiah 65, verses 8 and 9. The cluster was Israel, not to be destroyed for the elect's sake. The elect, being the worthwhile juice of the grape, while skins and pulp were discarded. Perhaps both these related messages may be found in the promise of the Lord's Feast of Fat Things, a feast of wines on the lees, which the Lord will make in Zion when the kingdom is established. Isaiah 25, verse 6. The teaching of the new covenant will be given by that same elect which was in the cluster and saved by God. Wine which in itself can be good, and yet can become a great evil, is also used of bad things, false doctrine and evil ways, in places in the writings of the prophets. The Lord uses wine to represent his own teaching in the enacted parable of the first sign of John's Gospel. He changed the water for legal purification into wine for the wedding feast, John chapter 2. An association of ideas also present in the parables of the bridegroom and of the wine skins. In the parable of the Samaritan, the injured man had his wounds dressed with oil and wine. Treated as a parable and not merely as an illustration, Jesus was the Samaritan, despised as such, who gave the gospel of salvation when legalist and ceremonialist passed by on the other side. There was need for new men to carry out the message of the Lord, not less so then than now. If a man be in Christ, he's a new creature, and as such he contains the gospel, not for his destruction, but for his own and its preservation. Jesus added a saying to this parable, an epitomized parable. No man also having drunk old wine straightway desireth new, for he saith, the old is better. Jesus understood human nature with its conservatism, so useful when retaining the good, so hindering when upholding what is false. The saying was his patient and understanding explanation of why some men turned from him, and why some good men desired to draw his disciples into the ways which they thought essential, but which Jesus knew had only limited value. Parables of the Messiah, number 20, Harvest and Labourers, Matthew 9, verse 36 to 38, Luke 10, verse 2. Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. Matthew 9, verse 35 and 36. Matthew's description of the multitude is based on the language of the prophets concerning Israel. They were scattered because there is no shepherd. Ezekiel 34, verse 5. But God said, he would set up one shepherd over them, and he shall feed them. Verse 23. This one shepherd, in marked contrast to the hireling shepherds of Ezekiel's days, had compassion on the people. God was Israel's king, and the shepherd was appointed by him. Sent by God to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, Jesus the shepherd sought to gather the sheep by teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom. Matthew 9, verse 35. In his compassion he said, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the labourers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest, that he will send forth labourers into his harvest. Verses 37 and 38. The quick transition of the figure from sheep to harvest is natural. The sheep were also plants growing in God's field. The work of shepherding was also, in another figure, the work of harvesting. Where the rulers spoke contemptuously of those who listened to Jesus as publicans and sinners, Jesus saw in the thronging crowds of Galilee men and women interested in his message, who, as wheat ripening, needed to be harvested. The harvest figure was a call for helpers, and since it was God's work, the helpers must be co-workers by his arrangement. The work was great, the workers few. So few at that moment that it was really one only, the Lord himself. But he said, "Pray ye therefore, the Lord of the harvest, that he will send forth labourers into his harvest." Verse 38. Then, acting as God's representative, he sent out the 12 in pairs, empowered to preach and heal. And he who had looked with compassion on the people and seen them shepherdless, told the 12 to go to them. Chapter 10, verse 6. In Luke's Gospel, the saying about the harvest is given in another but connected context. He records the sending of the 12 in chapter 9, verse 1, and then in chapter 10, verse 1, he says, "After these things the Lord appointed other 70 also." Also, that is, in addition to the 12. "And they were sent out in 35 pairs to preach, going before him on his tour." And to the 70 he repeated the words which prefaced his appointment to the 12. Much earlier in the ministry he had used the same figure of the harvest to represent his work. When the Samaritan woman hurried to her village home and burst out, "Come, see a man which told me all the things that ever I did," the Samaritans streamed out at her bidding to see Jesus. While she was doing this, the perplexed disciples were wondering what Jesus meant by his cryptic allusion to having meat of which they knew not, Revised Version. And Jesus was explaining that his meat was to do God's will. One part of that work he had been performing in his talk to the woman. And looking across the plains to the approaching Samaritans, he said, "Lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. And he that reapeth receiveth wages and gathereth fruit unto life eternal, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. And herein is that saying true, one soweth and another reapeth. I sent you to reap that whereon ye bestowed no labour. Other men laboured, and ye are entered into their labours." John 4, verse 35 to 38. Jesus had been sowing. There was even then a harvesting in that many Samaritans believed on him. Verse 39. But there was a fuller harvesting when the outspreading of apostolic labours took Philip to Samaria. Acts of the Apostles, chapter 8. The saying of Jesus is so framed that it covers many phases. All God's servants were labourers in this work. Others had laboured, the prophets and John. The work of Jesus himself continued it. The apostles entered into and carried the same work forward.